Chapter 9. Opening Salvos, Well Met. Possessed of either arrogance or sheer stupidity, the cruiser's crew took the bait. A modest-sized ship, Dauntless class, its name was the Chthonic Blood. A sea-green livery, and the eye emblazoned on its hull left its allegiance in no doubt. Sons of Horus. Every ship in the flotilla flew the War Master's colours, rigid in the airless void. Brutish, ugly vessels, they nonetheless looked capable and bristled with guns. But the Chthonic Blood had strayed, reacting to a faint signal return. Another ship, a known vessel of a war cell belonging to Shadrach Medjuson, had appeared on long-range auger. So the Chthonic Blood had decreased engine speed and begun to come about. Interference from the sporadic solar flares in this region of space was fouling ship-to-ship vox, but the ship's captain had every reason to feel confident. He had a pair of heavily armed destroyers to port and starboard, hovering in the upper and lower battlespheres relative to the Chthonic Blood. He would eliminate this errant vessel and return to the flotilla in short order, or so Neuros imagined. On the bridge of the Sorod, the Salamander gave a feral grin beneath his helm's faceplate. A pugnacious vessel, the Sorod had no voids, instead relying upon an all-encompassing sheath of adamantium armour plate. Scarred and pitted along both flanks, ventral and dorsal aspects, it had the demeanour of a hoary old drake too stubborn to die. Neuros liked it very much. It wasn't his vessel, in that he was not its captain, but it represented that last shred of Nocturne, a world he expected never to see again. A shame that it would have to earn more scar tissue. Wounds upon wounds, he thought, and supposed the Sorod was not so unlike everyone in Medjuson's company.
"What about Bloodtooth?"
he said across the vox, taking his leave of the bridge and signalling the warriors in his retinue to follow. More awaited him in the launch bays. Pyroclasts. Last of a dying breed, he thought.
"Is something wrong with just sword?"
Lumac's voice replied from another ship, the Gorgon's Will, several hundred kilometres away in the war leader's fleet. Neuros scowled, running along one of the spinal corridors that led down to the launch bays. At least the Sorod was a relatively straightforward ship, he reflected, as the first salvos from the Sons of Horus cruiser smacked against the hull.
"No art, you Medusans! No poetry, too prosaic, my iron-hided brother. I shall suggest another."
Armour shook, so did the corridor, but the worst of the broadsides was absorbed. The Sorod's engines burned hot, much like the blood of its warriors. Before Vulcan, the 18th Legion had been a self-destructive breed. No matter the odds, no matter the cost, they fought every war as though it were a war of attrition. Retreat would not be countenanced. Death was preferable. Extinction had loomed, genuinely. Only with their Primarch's tempering influence had the Legion survived and learned to fight a different way. Neuros wondered if, with Vulcan's death, they were destined to backslide towards self-annihilation again. He smiled sadly. At least that notion had some poetry to it.
"Vanquish! That's a good name,"
he said, barreling through the last ventral corridor, hunched against the close confines of the ship. Emerging through a blast door, the space opened out at once into a frenetic launch bay. Sirens blared, warning of the imminence of attack and of repeated damage sustained. Announcements crackled over the voxcasters, broken and indistinct.
"A tad presumptuous, perhaps," conceded Neuros. "But all the best names are hyperbole. That is what you need to reach for, Lumac."
The Averni captain grunted with disdain and severed the link.
"Do I hear reluctant agreement?"
the Salamander asked, feigning surprise, speaking to static. Lumac had his own battles to fight. Time Neuros went to his. He had reached the launches, a battered quartet of gunships readying for his and his warriors' departure. Servitors and dirty deck crews scurried. Four partial squads of pyroclasts stood ready too, their flame gauntlets unlit but eager. The remnants of a tactical support squad made up the rest of the complement, two carrying breacher shields. It was an uneven but battle-hardened party. Even with Neuros and his men, they numbered less than 60. Only one amongst the boarders eschewed Drakescale Green, and Neuros nodded to him as the ramps of the gunships opened in needlessly dramatic unison.
"Are you here to keep me alive, son of Korax?"
"Solemnly, I must," Kayla Norn replied.
He wore the Prime Helix on his left knee pad, and had a red stripe bifurcating the conical nose of his warhelm. Unlike some of the Apothecarian, Norn maintained his legion's forbidding heraldry. Neuros laughed, derisive, but clapped Norn on the shoulder guard as he passed by.
"To death, then," he said, nonchalant.
"Yours or mine?" asked Norn,
his mood as black as his armor. Neuros just laughed louder. Of all the legions sundered at Istvan, the Salamanders had suffered the worst. Not least of the harm done was the irreparable damage sustained by their apothecary carders, which had resulted in a severe shortage of battlefield surgeons and a grim cessation of the collecting of gene seed from the dead or mortally injured. Considering the latter, the prognosis for the Legion was bleak, but at least Norn's presence could help to redress the former. He followed Neuros up the ramp. As it closed behind him, the darkness of the hold engulfed them both. Shadrach Medjuson watched the hololith, his right hand on the pommel of his Albion sword. A formation of red icons, rendered up as basic battleship outlines, was strung out across the battlesphere, the three-dimensional region in which void combat took place. With the rest of the Ironheart's bridge in darkness, the hololithic display lit the hard contours of the war leader's armor in washed-out grey, emphasizing the lines. Somewhere in the shadows, the bridge crew silently toiled, hunched over consoles, waiting, as pensive as their captain. Another group of icons, this time in green, lurked at the periphery of the image, except for one. The ironclad known as the Sorod burned hard towards a light cruiser at the rear of the flotilla. A data feed to the right of the illuminated field of engagement showed that the Chthonic Blood had already changed course and launched an attack. A salvo of plasma torpedoes struck the Sorod's heavy armor, their trajectories each marked by a broken parabolic line to varying degrees of curve. At present, only a pair of destroyers had joined the larger ship. The rest of the flotilla carried on, unaware that their befouled communications had been caused by design, not solar radiation. This region was known as the Zanea Gulf, an unimportant part of the void, but one fraught with celestial phenomena anathema to the unimpeded function of both sensors and long-range vox. Medjuson had chosen it deliberately for an ambush, only made possible by the intelligence gleaned from Hamart III.
"I think our Nocturnian cousin enjoys taking a beating," said Makosa, coming to stand beside his war leader.
Medjuson blinked and felt the sting of his dry eyes. He grimaced, prompting a mildly concerned inquiry from the Sorgul captain.
"Just a little retina burn," said Medjuson. "But you're right," he added, gently kneading both eye sockets with thumb and forefinger. "He does enjoy a beating. Proves he's still strong."
"He's a masochist," Makosa replied.
"Aren't we all, brother?"
It had been a labour of extreme proportions preparing for and executing this attack. Days had gone into sounding out tactics and ship dispositions, the gauging of martial strength, both allied and enemy, assessing the proposed expenditure of ammunition and fuel, and estimating casualties. It had been a careful and meticulous balancing of effort against reward. It had been arduous, both gathering the various war cells and then convincing them of the sense of this endeavour, especially the Iron Fathers. But the battleships of Atraxi, Felg, Rorkarn, and Garsak had all joined the fleet.
Fleet. Medjuson laughed to himself at the word. Not yet, but soon.
Ortek Mor, at the helm of the Red Talon, commanded a sizable number of ships and warriors, and Medjuson harboured faint hopes that he would be willing to conjoin their resources. Mor had an independent streak, a warrior both arrogant and egotistical. He might just as easily stay to reap the battle spoils and then depart to wherever he saw fit. So be it, thought Medjuson. His grand cruiser alone would be a great asset in the fight to come. The flotilla outnumbered them and contained a host of frigates, but several cruisers too, the largest vessels to the front and rear of the formation. Smaller, more heavily armed destroyers roamed like outriders. These ships would have to be dealt with first. Medjuson's plan relied on the masters of the flotilla being overconfident and spread across a vast distance. They would be slow to manoeuvre and take time to react. And react they would. He needed a way to split their forces, to deal with the flotilla piecemeal. Only the destroyers had the necessary speed to complicate that plan. Neuros had already drawn out two, leaving the Sorod exposed in the process.
"They are bringing broadsides to bear,"
Makosa murmured. He half turned to the war leader.
"Can it take that kind of punishment?"
Medjuson's gaze never left the oculus.
"We are about to find out."
The Sorod rocked with thunderous impacts that sent warning alerts across every Vox speaker and console. Neuros watched the damage reports on his helm display, calm and quiet as he sat in the hold of the assault craft. An all-clear signal flashed up across his right retinal lens from the shipmaster, prompting Neuros to issue the launch order to all pilots. Across the deck, maintenance crews scattered into shielded observation blisters or behind blast barriers. Inside the hold, an icon flared from red to green as the launch tubes irised open and thrusters burned in throaty concert across the four gunships. Neuros engaged the Vox, switching the channel to address all hands in the assault party.
"Remember, our blood, red and thick on this sand," he said,
provoking a chorus of thudding sword hilts and stamping boots against the deck.
"Remember their traitors' blades in our backs."
One salamander bellowed a wordless oath of revenge. Another pressed his forehead to his sword in silent avowal. Across the holds of all four ships, fingers already grasping weapons tightened further.
"Whatever alliance you once knew with any of these bastards is dead. It died with your brothers. It died with Vulcan and with Ferus Manus. We go to fight our enemies. Let's kill them."
The pilot voxed a commencement warning. Grav harnesses descended and warriors leaned back to accept them, maglocking boots and weapons. Neuros closed his eyes, smiling darkly at the thought of what was to come. A chance to vent his hatred. The thrusters kicked, jolting the gunship forwards at speed. For a few seconds as they hurtled through the launch tube, a fist of pressure slammed Neuros against the back of the grav bench, until they cleared the Sorod and speared out into the void. The gunships flew in a loose formation, keeping beneath the Sorod and using the lee of its ventral aspect as cover. The larger ship surged towards the light cruiser before them, its armoured prow soaking up every pounding broadside. Almost all power had been diverted to main engines, its plasma drives white-hot with effort, its cowlings turned soot-black. A furtive lance strike from the Sorod flashed silently across the void, sending magnesium-bright light arcing through view slits. Several thousand kilometres of space, threaded with the beams of laser batteries and torpedo discharge, gaped between the two ships, the equivalent of close-quarters combat in void war terms. The Sorod intended to get closer still, and took a blistering amount of punishment doing so. Ablative armour sloughed off its prow like shed skin. Some of it drifted into the ironclad's wake, forcing its diminutive fighters into evasive manoeuvres. Neuros felt the pitch and yaw inside the hold as their pilot made rapid course adjustments. Something struck the hull, a glancing blow that sent the gunship spiralling. Its airframe groaned in protest, struts bent to breaking point, but eventually the gunship straightened out again. Two destroyers loomed out of the void dark, shark-like, hungry. Faster than the light cruiser by degrees, they had pulled ahead of the larger ship and come to engage the ironclad. Prow lances seared through cold space, soaring at the Sorod's armour. The destroyers roamed on alternate flanks, enfilading beams spearing from both port and starboard. They drove ahead of the ironclad's prow to avoid the thick-set armour and instead cut at its more vulnerable belly. Ventral cannons trembled with muted roars, spitting out immense shells that chased the hunting pair but failed to connect. As one of the destroyers came in close, Neuros saw its pitted hull through a view slit. Less than 2 kilometres long, it was a sleek and angular predator. It saw them, too, still over 1,000 kilometers away, and lit its deck guns. A desultory barrage would tear the gunships apart. Neuros dared not blink. He gripped the hilt of his sword, for a warrior should always die with a weapon in his hand, and mouthed a silent oath.
Vulcan lives.
The icons on the hololith had closed so that they almost overlapped. The Sorod had the bulk and the endurance, but against 3 vessels she was outmatched. But Medjuson watched the darkness below the engagement, an apparently empty tract of void space. And as the corward end of the flotilla began to react to the ambusher in their midst, the war leader's fists clenched.
"Do it now," he ordered.
The first destroyer came apart in a spectacular explosion moments before it could unleash its guns and wipe out Neuros and his fighters. A spread of torpedoes struck it amidships. The first salvo overloaded the shields. A second, delivered in rapid succession, cored the vessel and inflicted catastrophic damage upon its engines. The resulting chain reaction tore the destroyer apart. If its twin reacted, it did so too slowly. A lance beam speared into its prow. Stricken, unable to immediately retaliate, and unsure from where the attack had originated, the destroyer began to retreat and come about. A second lance salvo, more ferocious than the first, disabled its plasma drives and put paid to its shields for good. Streams of coolant and fuel spilled from a ragged wound in its hull. Under reserve engine power, it tried to limp from the engagement sphere. A former predator now become prey. Dalkoth chose this moment to pounce, the sleek black contours of the Stormcrow emerging from the void darkness. Nigh invisible to Augur, defying all but the most diligent sensor sweep, the frigate loomed into the crippled destroyer's battlesphere and applied the killing blow. Neuros laughed out loud when he saw it, relief and vindication coursing through his blood.
"Neuros lives," he thought,
and watched the Sorod drive inexorably towards its prey. He wanted to praise Dalkoth, but knew the ship had muted all vox. Instead, he reached over and wrapped his knuckles fraternally against Norn's shoulder guard. Ever reserved, the apothecary did concede the triumph by tapping the white raven emblazoned on his breastplate.
"That'll do, Norn," said Neuros boisterous. "That'll do just fine."
"The gauntlet is far from run yet," Norn replied.
Neuros laughed, thick and hearty, the fire in his belly unquenchable.
"Now there is the bleak-hearted Kiavaran I know."
But despite his good humour, Neuros understood the son of Korax was right. A relentless fusillade from the Chthonic Blood's laser batteries hammered the Sorod. For the cruiser's crew, desperation had set in with the chilling certainty that the hulking salamander's vessel would not stop. Neuros felt his gunship's engines slacken off, their speed decreasing as the formation rapidly fell back behind the Sorod. The ironclad braced to ram the Chthonic Blood, weathering a storm of fire from every weapon its enemy could bring to bear. A lance strike raked the Chthonic Blood's exposed flank, stripping shields in a succession of blistering iridescent energy blooms. Less than 1,000 kilometers stood between the two ships now, quickly diminishing thanks to the Sorod's ruthless engine burn. At last, the ironclad's scarred prow, a piercing draconic snout, touched the Chthonic Blood's already weakened defences. The cruiser's shields gave out in a silent flare of failing power, unravelling across the vessel's port side like dry parchment devoured by fire. No time remained to reignite them. Its lances still firing, tearing apart gun ports and shredding armour, the Sorod struck the Chthonic Blood like an impaling spear and kept going. Neuros had seen void ships collide before, most memorably at Istvan. Across the entire upper atmosphere, cruisers and frigates had run into one another as all efforts towards a coordinated withdrawal had broken down. Even transhuman composure could not entirely subsume panic when given a choice between escape and annihilation. Great warships had broken apart as a rash of noiseless detonations erupted throughout the tangled fleet. Some vessels fell with slow inevitability, trailing gas, vapour, and flash-frozen corpses. Others disintegrated as their reactors blew, turning the void into a radiation-choked debris field, swallowing smaller escorts in their violent death throes. Severed and bleeding, entire decks cleaved off and spinning, their screaming crews trapped within, the ships of the Loyalist fleet had been so densely arrayed that they had wrought much of their own destruction. The mauling of the Chthonic blood proved no less devastating to the flotilla. A gouge had been carved in its flanks, void ice rapidly coating the ragged tear, and men and materiel spilled out like seeds cast for harvest. The only reaper here, though, was death. Secondary explosions erupted along the seam of the vessel's hull as munitions and combustibles cooked off after the collision. The Sorod had come to a stop, bleeding too, its prow badly damaged and its forward lances inoperable. It had cast the spear, transfixing its prey, but now it had to withdraw. Engine burn lit the view slits in Neuros's gunship as the Sorod engaged its reverse thrusters. It slowly pulled back, but did so messily, wrenching chunks of the enemy ship with it. With the Sorod's brutal withdrawal, the four gunships that had sat patiently in its shadow surged forwards, arrowing through the debris field and straight for the gap in the Chthonic blood's abused flank. A battery of nose-mounted heavy bolters scythed a path into the ship, dispatching defenders summoned to repel boarders. They fought in a sea of floating bodies, amongst the dead who had not been violently ejected into space when the ship's atmospheric integrity was breached. Some of the defenders wore flimsy atmosphere suits and rebreathers, mortal armsmen with ineffective las carbines. Others had power armor, legionaries with heavier weapons that posed a genuine threat. One of the gunships was winged, its left engine flaring as it careened into the side of the Chthonic blood before it could right itself. Neuros scowled as a host of icons on his helm display lit up amber, then red. The other three ships forced a landing, killing the last elements of defiance with punitive bursts from their forward-mounted cannons. Ramps slammed down, silent, aggressive, and a boarding party of angry salamanders and one raven guard charged out. Neuros quickly established a perimeter, glancing at the chrono in his helm as he signalled a squad to remain behind and secure their landing zone. The rest he urged forwards. Bulkheads had come down in the wake of the attack, sealing off the other parts of the ship not gutted by the Sorod's prow ram, but Neuros sent two of his warriors to breach them with charges. Paired melter bombs detonated in eerie silence, turning a blast door to molten slag. Answering gunfire came through the breach, the edges still red-hot but cooling rapidly. Neuros descended into a thicket of lasbeams, flanked by the two legionaries with breacher shields. Two ranks of carbines, one line standing and the other crouched, opposed them, the mortals firing sustained bursts. The shields took the worst of it, before Volkites and bolters issued a devastating return volley. Blood, ash and bone painted the walls in grim silhouettes, matter flash-seared into the metal. The defenders clung on for a few more seconds before being overwhelmed. Taking the corridor, the salamanders sealed an inner door behind them. With repressurization, atmosphere and gravity returned too. Breaching the next door, Neuros led the drakes inwards and beckoned the pyroclasts into the vanguard. The Chthonic blood's defenders had reacted with impressive speed considering the blow they had sustained. Barricades had been set, choke points established, and heavier cannons brought to bear. As a body stricken by illness musters white blood cells to root out and eliminate infection, so too did the Chthonic blood respond to the interlopers at large on her decks. Determined as they were, mortal armsmen could not resist legionaries for long. Six well-defended and well-armoured barricades each fell in seconds, scorched to ruin. Norn tended to what few injuries had been sustained, but they were minor and did not reduce the efficacy of the boarders or their martial strength. The first blow had been to grab attention. The second was the killing thrust. Neuros and his warriors had but to apply it. The salamander checked his chrono. An approximation of the ship's layout tracked across the same retinal display, rendered as a flat technical schematic. Proximate to the salamander's position were the aft munition stores and the ship's main armory. They would be well defended. And as Neuros gave the signal to advance, he saw familiar bio-signatures via his auto-senses.
They are coming,
he murmured over the vox, shouldering his caliver, eager for the attention of old allies. He drew his blade instead.
They are coming.